Welcome to the Business Rents Podcast, where we have real conversations about the journey to being the best leader you can be in the workplace and at home.
Welcome back to the Business Rents Podcast, where we have real conversations about being the best leader you can be in the marketplace and in your community, and also being the best leader you can be at home. I am very excited to welcome Melissa Titano to the podcast today. So thanks for joining us, Melissa.
Of course, I'm excited.
We're very excited to have you. So if you could, for the listeners, just kind of share your bio and talk about like the business side of life, and then also just kind of share about the family side of life as well.
Perfect. Okay. Well, I'm Melissa Titano. I am one of the four owners of Legacy Title. I have been in the business, this June will be 25 years. And yes, I know that ages myself a little bit.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yes, 25 years. I went to school to be a paralegal, did that for about 3 months, hated it, was not my cup of tea, and saw an ad in the newspaper, because that's still how we did things back then, and applied for a job with a small title company in Norman. And I was hired there to basically run copies of things to go into abstracts. They paid me a whole $7.50 an hour back then. That was the going rate. And you know, I got to track down physical abstracts. We didn't do anything digital at the time. Actually, we didn't even have email when I started, if that tells you how long ago that was. But we would get in a contract from a realtor, and I would be responsible to track down that physical abstract, calling the competitors to see who was storing it. We didn't store in a central storage like we do now. And we actually had giant rolling walls of physical abstracts, and I would go through and pull those out and get them going. And then I spent some time in title insurance. I've done pretty much everything at this point on the title side, title and escrow, except exam. That's the only thing I haven't done, but I did work in the legal department and type commitments for the attorneys and kind of double check requirements. And so a little bit of everything. 8 years was on the title side. No people dealing, really. You're kind of secluded to yourself. And I think a lot of times what I've learned at other title companies was, if you're good at the job, they don't want you to move, right? Like, hey, but you're good in title, we want to keep you here. And I knew my goal was to be an escrow and I wanted to close. And so I really had to kind of fight and push my way to get to that point, and kind of trained on my own. Took a lot of notes and read through packets and learned documents and asked a lot of questions. Kathy Foshi is a name that's been in the industry forever. She passed away a few years ago, but she was my work mama, is what I called her. And I literally followed her around with a clipboard and asked, well, what if? And okay, if they can't do this, or if we can't find this, how do we handle this? And so I bugged the crap out of her, just trying to learn what to do. And one day our head closer had an emergency, family emergency, and had to leave and had a full day of closings. And they said, who's going to close those? And I'm like, you know, pick me, pick me. And since nobody else wanted to step up, I did. And my very first closing was the most awkward, quiet. The buyers asked lots of questions. I had no idea what I was doing. I had no business closing. It was a builder file, and that builder's still in business. We are still friends, and he does still close with me. But that day, the buyers ended up having to step out for something, and we sat there, and I'm just staring at the table. I don't know him. I don't know what to say. I don't know what I'm doing. And he finally just said, if you have more work to do, you can go and just come back later. And I came out like almost in tears. You know, I've lost this account. There's no way this guy is going to keep closing with us. And I learned that, one, people give grace, right? And two, if you're willing to do what it takes to get things done, people appreciate that. And like I said, I've been able to maintain his business all these years. We're great friends. And so that's kind of my history work-wise. Personally, I am married to Benjamin Titano, who is a tech sergeant in the United States Air Force. He is active duty. He has been deployed 9 times. He got back from his 9th deployment last February. He spent 4 years in Texas while he lived there, and I stayed here taking care of the kids, running the house, running the business. And so of our 14-year marriage, we have lived apart 8.5 of those years because of his active duty. We've got about 1.5 years left before he retires. Not that I'm counting down. I'm really excited for that day. And I don't know yet what he's going to do, what he chooses to do. He DJs on the side. That's kind of his side gig. He really just loves it. And we have 2 girls. My oldest, Alexandria, is 21. She is married and lives on her own. She works at St. Anthony's. And my youngest is 12. Going on 30. She thinks she's an adult. And complete opposite, right? My oldest was the responsible, quiet, nerdy, would rather read a book than go out. And the little one is Miss Popular and wants to come home and say, Mom, guess how many boys like me today? And I'm like, I don't want to know. What is wrong? You know, it's just total opposite. So that's been fun to relearn being a girl mom. But that's kind of my bio, work and home.
I can't imagine. I'm just thinking about like your husband deploying 9 times, and we have, we have a son in the Army, and he's getting ready, in the next potentially couple of weeks for his first deployment. And just all of the crazy leading up to that. And like, I mean, he's married with 2 little girls. And so like just how stressful that is for a family, and this is going to be his first time. Like, I can't really even get my mind around doing that 9 times.
It's tough. I'll tell you, you know, we've dropped off whether at the airport in Oklahoma City, or sometimes they fly from the base, depending on where, and we'll take him. Me and the girls usually go with me. And they know leading up to, and we have a lot of tears prior. And then we drop him off, we do our hugs. And every single time it's just, I guess, our way of coping is we drop him and we drive home in silence. And I can look in the mirror and everybody has just those tear streams down their face, you know, because 4 years in Texas, my oldest was 14 when he left. And when he came home, she was 18, and she got married at 18 and moved out and was done. So he left with a teenager and came back to a household of, went from 2 kids to 1 kid. And so He still says to this day, you know, when her dad and my husband walked her down the aisle, they said, you know, who gives this woman to be married to this man? My husband's like, I never answered. She's still mine. I never gave her away. She's still ours. We've never given her away. And he likes to remind her husband of that. So yeah. Very close. He came in the picture when she was 6. And so they've just been best of friends. And, you know, it is hard because we've got home life, you know, talking about home life versus work life. It's a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot to run a household by yourself. I won't say single mom because I still have the emotional support of him. We still can text and talk the majority of the time. So I won't take away from other single moms, but, it's tough. And then to run a business and grow employees and you know, we're in the growth period of our time here at Legacy, and we're getting ready to open our UConn office. We're getting ready to move and relocate our Klassen office. And so lots of hiring, lots of training, lots of who are we going to now place in a closing position and what fast track training do I need to get them on? And, you know, at some point it just becomes less about money and it becomes more about the growth of people. And that's really been my transition these last few years, is how can I get our people to grow and to be better prepared and to be able to answer the questions and put out the fires. And it's funny, now I joke, they don't even need me anymore. You know, they've picked it up and they've learned it, and I'm a proud mama. And so some days it's exciting, and some days I'm like, man, do they even need me here anymore? So, but we're definitely in our growth period. And so that's tough too, you know, because you've got home life and work life, and truly the partners and I work mostly around the clock on Saturdays and Sundays. We're texting ideas back and forth because we're so busy during the day. And so last week I was in California at Disneyland answering emails between getting on and off rides and taking a couple of calls. For the most part, you know, they left me alone, but sometimes there's a fire and I need to step away. And so we make that happen.
Wow. I think just hearing you talk about that, a lot of times I don't think people maybe fully understand the struggle or busyness of when you're trying to grow a business, but also do a really good job in the business day to day. Like those are two complete, you have customers and accounts to take care of every single day. And in that same allotment of time, you are also trying to manage growing that business, which, I mean, that's something that everybody in the real estate industry, like mortgage, realtors, title, I think can relate to at some point. If they're trying to scale their business and grow, you don't get to just stop working with customers and focus on growing. You have to do both well, and that can be really challenging.
Yeah, I had a lender reach out to me last week who said she's really working on relationships with title companies right now, so that, you know, as the refi boom that we all anticipate coming comes on, you know, she's got those relationships, which I thought was great. And one of the things she said to me is, she said, you know, when I reach out to these realtors and I say, where are you closing? You're the overall answer is Legacy Title. And she said, you guys have become the popular kids on the block overnight. What are you doing that's so different? And, you know, I've had competitors that are friends that reach out and say, how have you guys had so much growth so fast? What are you doing differently? And I'll have to be honest, there's no secret formula, right? There's no, like, you know, voodoo dolls or, you know, something in the background we're doing. It's truly growing our people and teaching and empowering them. And we've come up with some ideas. Lisa Kalman is one of our four partners, and she's always been the top closer in the state. She's, you know, definitely top closer on the north side, and south side's always been my area. And so we've been able to come together and really collaborate on how can we do this better, right? Because there's been so much that's changed on our industry, especially just in these last few years with COVID being thrown in and having to learn to move past the old way or the way we've always done it, and learn new ways and new technologies. One of those being abstracts going from physical to digital. Most of them are now, not all of them. We've still got some smaller counties that aren't quite on board yet, but now dealing with who e-records, who doesn't e-record, who does a physical abstract, who does a digital abstract. But kind of coming together and going, okay, on our side, how can we make this transition and these different moving pieces a little bit easier for our realtor and lender partners to consume? And so she's had some brilliant ideas. Some of them going, man, how have I never thought of that before? And then, you know, or maybe I'll throw out an idea and we can tweak it a little bit and come up with a great way. And, you know, are we doing things, you know, way different than the other ones? No, you know, we're still giving the same service. You're still getting the same product, but we're able to provide things and do things a little differently to make that realtor and lender's job a little bit easier. And so without giving away all the secrets, which you guys know we've worked together now for a few years, you know, it's just about service. It's about caring. You know, I've worked for those big title companies where you get a new contract and it's, here's more work to do. And that's not the attitude I want in our offices. We want it to be a celebration. We want to be excited when we get that contract. We don't ever, and we really talk about this, we don't want to lose the fact that when that realtor sends over that contract, when that lender gets that new contract, right, they're commission-based. These people don't eat, they don't put a roof over their head if this doesn't close. And so we can't lose sight of how important it is to meet those deadlines and get those dates and push forward. And it, not every closing is a celebration, right? You have death, you have divorce, you have different things. You guys know we play the counselor role as well. But we still, it's a celebration of that realtor got a contract, that lender's going to close this deal, right? These are our friends. These are our business partners. These are our referral partners. And you build those relationships over time. And, you know, we just don't want to lose sight of that within our offices. And hopefully we're doing that. So is it different? No, but I think the mindset is different, if that makes sense.
Definitely. Absolutely makes a lot of sense, because you, being on the lending side, you can tell the title people who want to do business and want to have a relationship and they care about the experience. And you can tell the people who don't really care about the experience.
That's it.
And it's that way with realtors and it's that way with lenders. Like you've got both sides of the equation in all of those aspects, but you can definitely tell. I mean, there are some that come across the desk and you're like, oh, yay.
Well,
and there are some where you're like, yay.
Yeah, we get those too. We're like, yes, this is our great realtor friend. And you see the other side and you're like, oh, this one might be a little bit more difficult than some of the others. But you learn, you adapt, you overcome. You know, everyone can be pleased most of the time.
That's true. Yeah.
Something I wanted to ask that you touched on was talking about like growing people. And so since you started in the title industry, like on a very, in a, like a very intro role, like you were talking about, a lot of times when people, I've seen this in, especially like in previous, like I spent a lot of years in retail management, and a lot of times when people work their way through the ranks and then get in a position where they're leading other people, I've found that they don't they haven't necessarily developed those leadership skills. Like they kind of worked their way into management or leadership or whatever. And there's a lot to be said for working your way up. But a lot of times just because you did that doesn't necessarily mean you know how to lead other people. And a lot of times people get into that position and then they were successful all the way along in their career path. And then suddenly when they're responsible for other people, it kind of, the train goes off the tracks because they didn't either take the initiative or they didn't know how to develop themselves as a leader so that they could be successful in that role. What are some things, like what are some strategies or things that you have personally implemented to help you to grow other people as you became an owner and now you're responsible for the success of the business, but also the success of the people that work with you? What kind of things have you done to develop people and to develop that leader within you, I guess, so to speak?
I'll tell you, you know, I learned a lot in my 25 years working for other people at big title companies, and I learned a lot of what not to do. I took a lot of mental notes on when I'm the worker bee, I felt this way when my manager did XYZ, right? And so, and title's kind of hard because it's a tough thing to learn. It's not something I can train you in 3 weeks or in a month. You just know everything. It's 25 years. I still don't know everything. You know, I still have questions daily that I've got to do the research and find out. And I've worked for a lot of leaders, right, or managers that want to know this is all mine. I can't teach you this because then you become an asset, right? And so it's, I promised myself if I got to that position, I would never be that manager. And I think there's a big difference between managing or being a boss and being a leader. I'm not a boss. I don't like that word. I think it's a bad word. We call it the B word here. I'm not the boss. I'm a leader. And I truly feel like even those underneath me or those within the company can also be leaders without a title. You don't have to have a manager title or a lead your team, lead the person next to you, you know, teach them something, show them something, make them feel valued, empower them. Because that's the thing is I always felt like, you know, I worked for that manager that would say, hey, come in my office. You're better with words and type this email to my boss. And I'm like, I'm literally at her computer writing an email with her name on it. Or I've worked for the person who doesn't know how to do my job. And yet they're the ones that get to review me yearly and decide if I get a raise or not. But they don't even know what I do all day and couldn't step in and do that. And so that's one thing I don't want to lose track of ever. I can do every job within the company. Now, I am not the expert anymore because I don't do it on a daily basis. I'm not as fast as those who do it. However, I could step in and I know the ins and outs and the basics of it. And I also don't want to be the leader because I've worked for these people as well who they forget those skills, right? Now I've made it here and things change and they don't keep up with it. It's really important to me to know the ins and outs and what they do. And I will step in at any time and fill in for any person if I need to within the company. And kind of tying back to the, you know, home life versus work life, I don't want them to miss their kids' awards ceremony or their play or whatever's happening at school because we're waiting on lender instructions that have been promised for 3 days and they're still not here. Obviously not you guys, but but that stuff does happen. And so, you know, we've got the realtor on the phone saying, hey, can you sit and wait? I know that you've waited on this for 3 days, but this is coming. They're saying 30 minutes. I don't want our people to lose that family time. And so we have enough hands now that I can say, you go and so-and-so is going to watch for those and plug those lender numbers when they come. And if I have no one, I'll do it, because that was one thing growing up in the industry, because I truly grew up here with my kids, was I did miss a lot and I had to reevaluate. And probably one of my biggest regrets is not going to some of those. Now, I'm fortunate enough, my mom's here. She could fill in. She could go to things for me. So they had my kids had someone there, don't get me wrong. But I regret not being there, not being able to see their face, because I've got that realtor who wants to post on Facebook and social media, you know, work-life balance and you shouldn't be proud to be working late nights. But that's the same realtor that's going to call me and say, hey, I know the lender doesn't have anything to you. Can you stay tonight? I know your kid has a play, but I need you to stay because this has to close. And I would do it every single time, no questions asked. And I put work before my family, not on purpose, but because I was trying to build a business. Did it help me? Sure. But I'm going to tell you, if I died today, those realtors aren't coming to my funeral. I didn't gain more business from that listing agent who has a relationship with XYBC title company because I stayed late that night. And what did I miss was my kids' thing. And so that's one of my regrets. And that's one thing I don't want for our people. When Tony and I started this together, it was faith, family, work. And we really try to stand by that. Yes, we want to do an exceptional job. Yes, we want to outwork our competitors and earn every business that we get. However, I don't want any of our people to miss out on those big moments with their children, with their spouse, because of work. And so if I need to step in to make that happen for them, I'm happy to do that. But we do have a lot of people cross-trained and who can do that as well. And so, you know, if you've got a sick kid and you can't come in today, maybe I'm rearranging my day or maybe somebody's taking over something. One thing that we've implemented is we have a floater position, and that person learns every position within the company. And whoever's out for a sick kid or just a vacation, you know, they can step in and kind of do that as well as me. That way we've got a couple of hands, you know, if I can't rearrange something. And so, yes, it's extra money, but it does give our people that time that they're able to make their family a priority. And so we really try to stick with the faith, family, work mentality here.
So one thing that you mentioned that stuck out to me is the whole, you mentioned at one point, they don't need me. Like, and I think that, you know, we can laugh and make jokes and stuff, but that really is profound, because being secure in you and your job and your abilities and your leadership to raise up people and teach and empower and grow people so that you aren't necessarily needed is a good, that is like really the epitome of what you want, because you could step back and take a day or whatever you needed, and you don't have to stress and worry that things would fall apart. And I think that that equates perfectly in work life, but also in your home life, because as your kids grow up, yes, you always want, you know, our 17-year-old is now our youngest, and she's about to get married and go away. And because her fiance is a Marine, so they will leave. But like, yes, I want my kids to always need me. But like, your goal is they don't need you. They can be functional, productive, wonderful members of society, and they don't need me to do that. And that's just, and so it's funny to me that you mentioned that as work.
Yeah. So it was hard for me when Tony and I started, it was Lincoln at the time when I came over here, and I'll be honest, kind of how that happened was I was working for another title company, and Tony got my name from another person that said, hey, you need to get this girl over here and run this for you. And he had texted me and called me I mean, borderline stalked me for several months. And it was, you know, let's just have a conversation, just come in and talk to me. And I'm like, no, I'm not interested. Who's Lincoln Title? I don't want to be involved in that. I've got the corporate cushy job. I'm good. And he pushed and pushed. And so finally I'm like, okay, dude, I'm going to come in and meet with you just so you'll leave me alone and stop calling me. And you know, thanks, but no thanks. And I came in that night and we probably talked for a good 5 or 6 hours I was here. It was, you know, visions aligning and things coming together. And I went home and I talked to my husband and I'm like, okay, here's the deal. This man's offering me ownership to come in and run his company, get it off the ground, make it profitable. I'm not buying in. I didn't have any buy-in money, you know, so it was, you know, at what point again in my career is this going to happen? Who's going to come to me and say, hey, if you'll make this successful, I'll give you ownership. And it was like, I got to try, right? I need to take this leap of faith and I need to try. And I had realtors call me very concerned and said, this is career suicide. What are you doing? Nobody's going to close there. Nobody knows who that is. You need to stay where you are. And I just had to have enough confidence and faith in myself that one, I can do it. And if I couldn't do it and I give it my best, I knew I gave it my all. I could land another job elsewhere. You know, I had made enough of a name for myself that I could get another job. And I had to just rest in that and go, okay, I'm going to try it. And so when I came in, we started closing. That first year, our order count went up 168% within the first year. I mean, we grew faster than anything I had anticipated. Wow. And, it's really funny, the realtors that said career suicide, they still giggle and they're like, I can't believe you did this, and they close here. You know, it was like they bought in, they followed in, and they're very loyal here as well. But I had to also, after that first year, and I'm talking, I came into, we don't have any documents. The ones we have aren't correct. There's typos all in them. There's no statutes. There's nothing quoted. I'm talking blood, sweat, and tears, literally 18-hour days. I didn't know I was walking into that big of a mess. Not any fault of Tony's. It's just when you open a title company, realtors don't just line up at the door with contracts. And I think maybe that's what he thought. I'm not sure what he thought. He's a very successful businessman, don't get me wrong, but title was not his jam. And so when I came in, I said, here's what I can promise you. I know these realtors will come with me. I can say, here's where I can get you a month. And he's like, okay, we're profitable there. We had 3 employees in 1 office. And then as we grew, it became apparent quickly that I could not close full-time and run a company, you know, the building of it, getting out on the streets, talking to people. And so Tony came to me and said, okay, you're going to have to let go of your book of business. And as a closer, that is terrifying. When you've closed for 20 years and you have built, you know, an outstanding book of business on the south side, and to just turn that over to someone else was terrifying. But also, I don't even have experienced closers. You know, I don't have someone I can hand it over to and go, okay, they know what they're doing. Because again, we were a tiny title company. We had no employees, really. There was just a couple of us. And so now it's, okay, I need to identify talent. I need to bring them in. I need to crash course train, right? So I have to find somebody who's eager. And I have learned, I would rather have someone eager who wants this than somebody who has experience, because I can teach all day, but I can't make you want it. And so when we hire people, I almost try to scare them away with like, here's what this is. This is not just signing people at the table like most people think. And if you're still willing to come in and give it a shot, I can't want it for you more than you want it for yourself. And that's my biggest thing. Like, you have to want this more. You have to put in the work and effort. And so when I let go, you know, I kind of transitioned and handed that over. We had ended up hiring, actually, my sister came to work here. She was working for an eye doctor because I could not get anybody in here. She's done a great job. She's one of our closers, Wendy Day. And then we ended up hiring Adriana, at the time Kelso, who was a waitress formerly. And people are like, what are you doing? Well, here's the deal. She has to multitask. Customer service is huge. And she was eager and she wanted it. And she's one of our top closers within just a few short years. And in fact, she's now managing our escrow office here in Moore. And she's in her mid-20s, you know, and I remember being a closer in my mid-20s going, I want to close, give me the business. And they're like, you're too young. And fate just kind of opened that one day, and I was able to step in and kind of show I could do it. And then I became the youngest closer on the South side for a while. And I know that's funny now because I'm an old lady, but at one time I was, and now I have the youngest closer on the South side and she's kicking butt. And it's because she wants it. We celebrate with our realtors when there's a problem, you know, we jump in the trenches, me included, and we get things done and we get them worked out. And people remember that. They remember how you make them feel when they leave and they felt important and taken care of and stood behind and backed. They will come back to you. And so there's not some secret recipe we're doing. There's no, you know, secret formula. It truly is just caring and putting it out there. And so identifying future leaders. I was going with my story with Legacy. So when we switched from Lincoln to Legacy was when we brought on Lisa Kalman and Chris Morris. And I'll be honest, I was not a fan of the name Legacy. I got outvoted. They were like, nope, we want to call it Legacy. And I'm like, it's generic. There's tons of Legacy stuff. I'm not a fan. I had my own suggestions that got outvoted, which is fine. I'm not bitter, but the Legacy name has grown on me. And so what I had to do is I had to change my mindset. I think that's a huge thing, right? So I had to sit down and go, okay, Legacy title is not the name you would have picked. I get it. But let's look further into the name, right? Legacy. I'm leaving a legacy. People are buying a home to leave a legacy for their children. What's my legacy? What's my part in this? And I truly believe my part, and God put me here, right? My part is to identify and grow future leaders in this industry. And I promise you, I will leave this better than when I came in. And that is these young people. They're going to replace me at some point. I have to retire. At some point, Tony, Chris, Lisa, we will no longer be here. And I want to make sure that our company is still thriving and still doing a great job because it's a legacy I'm leaving behind to the next generation. And that's what we're working on. And that is my goal right now, is just kind of identifying and bringing in new talent and making sure that they're equipped, that they are given every opportunity. There's never a ceiling here. When we hire, you know, you may start, you know, at the front desk and be closing in a year. It just depends on how bad do you want it? How much work are you willing to put in? And I'm telling you, as a young person who wanted to close, I'm taking home packets, which by the way, wasn't allowed because I did bring them back, I promise. But I would take them home and I would read through all those lender documents. It is not exciting stuff. Don't get me wrong. I can tell you this feeds from this to this. This is where this number comes from. These documents connect. And I've made it more simple. And then I've been able to teach within our staff. I've had lenders come to me and go, this closer did an exceptional job explaining my documents. Can I have her come in and teach my staff what our documents mean? And that means we're doing something right. And so it's not, again, big difference between a boss and a leader, right? Your boss is going to be there 8 to 5. At 5, they clock out and you may stay until 8 or 9 o'clock and they're at home enjoying their life. That's not how we do things. And we also within our offices pay a little bit differently. And so everybody gets a commission structure based on allocations before profits. And so everybody, it's like a profit sharing, right? And so everyone within that office gets a percentage of that office's profits from the prior month. So that encourages this team to help this team. So at 3 o'clock, when I hear one team going around going, hey, my stuff's done, who needs help? That's not something I heard at other title companies. That doesn't happen. Wow. And it's because most title companies pin this closer, this processor, our team, this closer, this processor, our team, and they get paid on what they bring in and close. And that's fine. But we wanted to do things a little differently when I came in, as I wanted it to be an office, one big team. So when a contract comes in, I don't have two closers fighting. That's my realtor. No, that's my realtor. Well, I took them to lunch. No, I talked to them last, you know. None of that. They literally will flip a coin sometimes and go, okay, you take it. And I want our realtors and lenders to be comfortable enough that, hey, if I close up Legacy, all of them know what they're doing. All of them will jump in and help. All of them will get the job done. And two, you know, I've worked at some, we talked about mobile homes prior to this, just the three of us, you know, I had 2 mobile home calls this morning, 2 fires that, you know, we're a mess. I've worked for title companies that have a mobile home person, and all of the mobile homes that come in close with that person. I feel like that handicaps for their closers. They need to know how to do it. They all need to know how to do it. And so we do training and intense training. I'm currently right now writing a 10-week course for my employees, and our newer people or people who just want to learn more will come in, and I will do a 1-hour a week course with our internal staff, and we're doing everything from order entry to close and post-closing. What does the policy do? When do we issue it? What does the lender need? Why do they need that? How do we get this to them? And so it's a giant puzzle that I really believe if you can put all the pieces together in their brain, and right, everybody learns differently, you have to remember that, but now they're more apt to be able to jump in and answer questions or help the next person because they've been given that training and that knowledge. Whereas other title companies, you know, it's summertime, we're busy, let's hire a body and put them in there. We have no training, it's baptism by fire. I've heard that 100 times, you know, sink or swim. I've heard that 100 times. I don't want that. In the winter, title companies typically lay off. We get slower. Let's let go of some people and then we'll rehire in the summer. That's not what I want here. And if that means I need to take money out of my pocket to make payroll, then that's what we do because I need to keep the experienced staff, the people who want this here so that when it does get busy again, we're prepared. And we've had, you know, big nationwide title companies come after our people. More than 10 last year of our people were hit up for jobs and we only have 40 employees. And they were coming out going, hey, if you'll come here, we'll give you this and this and this. They didn't even talk to them. And so that tells me we're doing something right. They're happy here. They truly feel like they're important and part of a family, and they absolutely are. And everyone is important from my front desk. She is not just a receptionist at any of our front desks, right? They're putting in orders. They're answering questions. They're sending out wires. They're not a receptionist or a secretary. They are an escrow person. They're an escrow assistant. They help with everything. And no one's more important than the other. If that means Tony and I have to go out and pick up trash or if I have to plunge a toilet today, then that's what happens because the job has to get done. And so if they see us do it, they're going to do it, right? There's no job that I would ask them to do that I wouldn't do myself. And I feel like that makes them buy in, right? Chris always has these weird sayings, but one of them he says is like, everybody has to pull on the same rope. And as much as I make fun of him, he's right. I need to get all of our staff to, you have to buy in, you have to want this, you have to want to be here, and you have to want to outwork our competitors and earn every bit of business. I'm not ever going to go out and ask for business if I'm not prepared to earn it. And it's the same across the board. And so do we do things a little bit differently? Yes. But I feel like maybe that's the reason for our growth. And we're not done. We don't want to be the biggest in the industry by any means. We'll probably do 1 or 2 more offices and stop because we want to remain that small, local boutique title company that you walk in and you feel like family. I don't want it to ever feel sterile or you can't talk to someone or, you know, I've been to title companies where they say it feels like a hospital, you know, it's just not very welcoming. I don't want that. You know, we want you to come in and come to the back and find me. Come say hi. I've had the front desk calls and say, so-and-so's here. They want to say hi. I am more than happy to come downstairs and meet with people and talk to them. Something else is the education. I truly love what I do. I still take additional CE, even though it's not required, because I like it. I'm interested in it. And so I write CE, all of our classes I've written, and we do a lot of teaching for realtors and lenders. You know, and is title the most exciting thing? No, don't get me wrong. I love it, but I know that that's not for everyone, but we can make it fun and exciting. And then again, people want to learn from you. And so I try to do a lot of classes. Chris Morris and I teach together. I don't know if you know him, but he is a very funny guy. I'm not near as witty and funny as he is, but we've known each other for so long. We can play off of each other. People feel like they're part of our friend group and, you know, we can get them laughing. And if you can make the learning fun, it makes them a better agent, a better lender, and they enjoy it. And why not want to enjoy your CE, right? You're not logging into some YouTube video, you're falling asleep while you're watching it. No, we want to tell you stories and we want to give you examples. And at 25 years, I can tell you some crazy stories. And so usually there's something we can connect and they leave and go, wow. Or I'll tell a story and I'll have an agent go, that was my deal in the back. And I'm thinking, oh yeah, that was you, you know? And so, you know, we do try to make it fun. And the same for the employees. When we do our training, we want it to be fun and something that we have some sort of example or story that makes it stick. And I do think that that helps them remember it a little bit better. Sorry, that was a whole lot.
No, that's so good.
The Schiffer Lending Team with Canopy Mortgage is proud to bring you this episode of the Business Rents Podcast. Being a great leader means leaving a legacy. One of the common ways people leave a financial legacy at home is through real estate. At the Schiffer Lending Team, we are honored to be a part of that journey. If you'd like to explore what that might look like for you, reach out to us by email, home@schifferlendingteam.com.
If I could, so like one of the things that we love to talk about, because we're talking about like the business side of life and then the home, like parenting side of life and the overlaps and the way that we grow in both. And so a question that I like to ask, because I know Corey and I have really experienced this having four kids. And so then you have we've spent a lot of years being parents because, you know, we started at 19 years old and, you know, now we have a 17 year old and we're 43, 44. So like we've had this time of growth within ourselves. And so one of the things that we've talked about in previous episodes is how like our kids get different versions of us over the years. And when we have older kids and younger kids, a lot of times the younger kids get the best mom and dad because we've learned how to do parenting better. And so it's the same thing in business and in parenting, I feel like, where, you know, as we become better business owners and business leaders, then our future and newer employees just keep getting better versions of us as leaders. And so switching to the parenting side, maybe just share about what are some ways that maybe you've grown as a parent or changed as a parent, or even maybe talking about like what are some principles that you've learned in the corporate part of life that has helped make you a better mom or spouse or, you know, whatever, maybe just some stuff like that.
Sure. So my husband, while not a business owner, right, you have your own platoon or troop, or depends on where he's at and what he's doing at the time. So we talk a lot about business and how it translates to parenting. It's funny, the things that we do here are things that the military teaches them leadership wise. And it's not things that we've been taught. It's just over time, you kind of learn and you pick things up. Could I have done this even 5, 6, 7 years ago? Probably not, if you want the truth. And I'm very much an introvert. And so teaching classes, I taught for the Oklahoma Surveyors Association last year. There were 400 plus people in the room. I thought I was going to have a panic attack. And so if you told me I was going to be doing this, I would have laughed at you. There's no way. But I think parenting gives you a little bit of strength, right? Those little girls look up to me, and I have to be the version of me that I would want them to be. And so I try to remind myself, patience is a big one. Patience with the kids, patience with employees. And remembering everybody doesn't learn the same. And so, like I said, my girls are complete opposites. I've got one who was straight A's. I didn't have to stay on her. She was great. But also an introvert. And then I've got one who's clearly like her dad and is super extrovert. And, you know, being popular to her is a big priority in her life, more so than I wish it was. But that will also come in handy because she's got that confidence that I didn't have, that my oldest didn't have. It took me many years to learn to fake it well, where I hope she keeps that little fire inside of her, that little piece of confidence, because she could truly do anything she wants to do. I would say navigating the social part of being a parent with kids is the hardest. You know, we had a lot of tears. Fifth grade girls can be mean. We're seventh now, but that was a tough year for her. A lot of nitpicking, little things that really aren't a big deal, but in her world, that was the whole world. That was the big deal. And so I have to remind myself, my oldest one, and I don't think she would mind me sharing, she struggles really bad with depression. It runs in my family. It's something that, you know, many of my family members deal with, and that's not something I deal with. And so it's hard for me to understand. And so we went through a few years ago where she was borderline suicidal. We were at that point. And I'm thinking, what else could I have given? What else could I have done? You have a great life. I don't understand why we're here. And that was really hard for me. And so we got her into some counseling. He was able to get her on the correct meds that she needed to kind of balance things out. And she's doing much better now. But it was me going, I have thrown myself into work and I failed as a mom. And so what could I have done different? What should I have done different? And it's funny you say you feel like you're a different parent when you're older versus younger. My kids are 9 years apart. We had a couple miscarriages in there. And so they're quite a bit apart. Also, different marriages for me. My oldest dad lives in Elk City. And so you also now have to learn the new piece of parenting, right? With this kid has additional family that I have to include and involve. And then this one, you know, and their dads may have different opinions. And so that's been something. There's no perfect answer for me on my part. I'll tell you, like I said earlier, my regrets was putting work before, you know, that award ceremony or that, because I'm trying to build this and I'm trying to leave a legacy, right, for my kids and for the employees. But in the end, that one file isn't going to make or break things. You should have people that can jump in and help so you can go to those things. And so showing up, being a part of it, I'll tell you, both of my girls will say I'm their best friend. And they tell me sometimes way more than I want to know. But I try to keep those lines of communication open because I feel like that's important. If they're not talking to me, who are they talking to? And so I want them to be able to ask those embarrassing questions or those. And sometimes, let me tell you, when we get to those teen years, some of those questions, you're like, oh my gosh, don't make a face, you know, you can't hold it. But I would rather them come to me than their friend who's going to not give them great advice. And, you know, we're still close to both of them. And now it's a different parenting role. My oldest is an adult. She can order a drink if she wants to when we go out. You know, she's married. She's on her own. She likes to remind me of that sometimes. But I still try to mom her, right? And I'll still, my husband will say, I never talk to her, the oldest. I never, you know, she talks to you all the time. How are you getting to talk to her? She's not reaching out to me. It's me blowing her up, right? Because she has a life and she's busy just like we are. And so it's a funny meme I see that reminds me of her and I'll send it to her. Or I'll just send her a quick text checking on you. She'll always respond. And so trying to keep her close, trying to keep her a part of everything, and then parent the little one who is either going to lead a gang in prison or be a CEO somewhere. I'm not sure which direction we're going yet because she's a lot. We call her our sasshole. It's not a cuss word. She's our sasshole because she truly is. But I love that she's got that piece of my husband in her, that she is that extrovert. And I wish I was more like they are. And I just don't know that there's a perfect answer on how to. I'll tell you, there's days that I'm like, man, I'm killing it at work, but I'm failing at home, or I'm killing it at home and I'm failing at work. And so I struggle with that a lot still to this day, is keeping that balance. If I work an 18-hour day, which happens here or there, then I need to make sure that I plan something this weekend for the kids that we're all together doing something fun. And to be honest, even just being home, she's at that age now, we're preteen, where she would rather be in her room on social media changes things. You know, she can FaceTime with her friends. She can Fortnite and have the headsets. I don't really understand all that stuff, but she can get on video games and talk to her friends and stuff. She doesn't need someone over because they still have contact. But you also have to be involved in listening. What are they talking about? What's going on? And so, you know, it's hard. So I try to go in and, oh, what are we playing? I have no clue, right? Oh, it's this game, mom. Oh, well, what's that? And she'll laugh at me because I don't know. But just keeping her talking to me, keeping them both coming to me for advice. I don't always have the answers, just like in business. Sometimes you have to go find them. And when we face that suicidal piece, of course, my husband was deployed. And so I called the counselor and I just bawled my eyes out. Here's where we're at. Here's what I've done. Here's what I think. what should I have done? And it was good to hear him say, hey, I do this every day and I'm a counselor and my own daughter dealt with this. You know, the things that kids are exposed to and they see at a younger age, it does have an effect. And, you know, the things we did embarrassing in elementary school, junior high, high school, some kid threw up on the bus. Cool. We would have, you know, maybe someone would have laughed or whatever, helped him out. And he would have been over it the next day. Whereas they're videoing that stuff and they're sharing it. And now it's going viral. And so it's a different world for them. And I have to remember in my parenting that it may not feel like a big deal that this boy doesn't like her back and she likes him, but in her world, it is her whole world. And I have to take that seriously, even though deep down I know she's not going to even know who that boy is in 10 years, but she doesn't know that. And I, you know, at that age, I was the same way. And so it's buying in just like it is at work. I'm buying into her team. So it's, you know, who do we like this week? Right. And of course I don't say it like that, but then it's, oh, well, did he talk to you today? How was it? You know, and I don't want to encourage or push her to boys necessarily, but that's her focus. And so, you know, or did this girl, you know, end up talking to her mom and, you know, trying to help on that side. And so both of my girls are empaths and they kind of take on people's feelings. My little one's very sensitive. And so she's always trying to help the one being bullied. And she's, while she wants to be popular, she still has that sensitive, caring, protecting piece in her that I really want to nurture and grow because I think that will take her far. And, you know, you'll have employees sometimes that come in and you may not love that person as a person, but you can grow them as an employee. And maybe as they grow and mature and develop, you'll look back and go, okay, you know, I really do kind of like them. And, you know, everyone has their pieces and myself included. I have my own weaknesses in business and at home. And so identifying those and working on goals yearly is something we do here. And it's something we do at home. The girls have to set goals and we do what we do to try to meet those. And it's human nature, right? It feels good to meet your goals. And so, that's just one thing we kind of implement that crosses both lines there. I think that answered your question.
Yes, definitely. That was really, really, really good. I was wanting, I know Corey can relate more to the mom side, so I'm trying not to interject and let her respond.
No, I feel that it has been, I'm thankful that, so our three kids that are grown, we have, you know, our oldest here who just bought our first house in Purcell, and then our son in Tennessee, and then our son in the Army in North Carolina who's married with kids. And I am so thankful that they will still call and for advice, or this is what's going on in my life, or to, and I'm like you, if I don't hear from them in a day or two, I'm texting, hey, what's up, how's it going, you know, like, because that's kind of been, and Chad and I've had this conversation as they've been growing up, I put myself in the middle of their business as often as I can. Not because I'm trying to be a helicopter mom, but just so you kind of know what's going on. And you can, I mean, I don't know anything about video games or electronics either. And so I'm just like pretending like I care and I want to know, even though I've tried to play the video games and neither of my boys want me to play because I ruin it.
Get me on my team.
But you know, but I'm trying to be interested in what they're interested in. I'm trying to be, you know, and my 17-year-old will say things and I'm like, it just makes me laugh, some of the things that she says, because I'm like, I never would have said that to my mother, you know, like I would have gone to somebody else or whatever. But to have them feel like they can say something, because like you said, if they're not talking to me, they're talking to somebody. And I tried to direct them, like, if it's not me, at least it can be somebody that's responsible and mature and going to give them good advice. But I really don't want them going to their friends who's going to tell them bad advice. But I mean, to still have, it is so like, it's hard to like, it's like, so rewarding to watch them grow up and fully jump into everything that they can be. And to watch them become spouses and, you know, parents, and it's scary and exciting. And it hurts my heart a little bit because, like, you know, I'm their mom and I want them to want me and need me. So now with our 17-year-old, and this is whatever, you can say I'm a bad mom, you can say I'm a good mom, you can say whatever. We actually moved, so we have a pole barn that we remodeled, and it's like an in-law suite now. And we literally just moved our 17-year-old into the barn. But like, I want her to get to understand and know, like, she can kind of start experiencing the adult life while she's still in my backyard. So like, mama is still here, 100 feet outside your door, but yet she makes her own dinners, she makes her own lunches, she has to clean the building, she has to write her own groceries, like, she has to be an adult and live on her own, but yet we're here if she needs us. And it's funny because, like, pretty much every day she comes back up to the house and sits, and we have our shows that we watch together or whatever, but I still... He'll, you know, she gets to FaceTime on the weekends when her Marine gets his phone. And I'm always like, I'll take her phone and I'm talking to him and asking him all sorts of questions, getting in his business. And then when they hang up, I'm like, so how was that? What'd you talk about? You know, how's he doing? What's up this week? What'd he do last week?
Absolutely. You're empowering and giving independence, but still there for a fall. And that works at work and at home. It does. Yeah.
And I want her to fall. I want her to fall at home.
We all have fallen. I've fallen.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so important to me as a mom. I want all of my kids to fall at home. Mm-hmm. Because I can help you dust it off and stand back up and moving. But when my son in North Carolina falls down, like, he's an adult now, so it is what it is. But, like, can you imagine if I didn't give him the grace to do it at home?
Absolutely.
And try to help him understand that it's okay. I mean, I'm 44, and I say stupid things almost every day.
Oh, me too.
You do bad things, you fall down, so let's learn how to pick it up.
That's it.
And keep trying. I mean, it's funny because, I mean, you can hear it both ways, but I'm just like, I'd rather you fall down 1,000 times while you're still in the under the umbrella of us so that we can help you. Because now having 2 kids out of state, when things happen, the mommy in me is like, oh, my gosh, I'm going to go pick it up. But then you're like, OK, I know they have what it takes. They know how to dust it off. They're going to get back up and it's going to be OK. And then you can do the praise and the reward and the empowering of you did this. And it just makes you more proud. But, oh, my Lord, it's so hard. I think it's harder to be the parents of young adults than it is.
I agree.
To have your kids. It is hard to, like, want to be mom, but you know you have to stand back and be more friend.
Yes.
And that is the hardest thing, I think.
But even in work, you know, the employees will come and go, I messed this up. Oh, I'm so sorry. And, you know, they're harder on themselves most of the time than I would be on them anyway. Here's the deal. I've messed up and I've shared stories where I've cost the company money on multiple occasions. Now, it's not ever been huge things that's going to, you know, detour my career or the company, but I've made some big mistakes myself. And guess what? You're all going to it. When you do this and you do it forever, you're going to mess up. The faster you tell me, the cheaper it is to fix and the easier it is to fix, right? So I've worked in those places where they're terrified. I can't go tell them I made a mistake. I'm going to hide it in a drawer. Okay, well, when it gets found, it's now a way bigger deal than had we known at the front. So that's always been a big thing, is open lines of communication here and at home, right? So you want your preteen, in my case, girls, I want them to come to me. I want the employees to come to me. They all have my cell phone number. They can all text me at any time, call me at any time, walk in my office. Sometimes there's a line at the door. But I stay involved in my employee lives as well. I know who's dating who. I know who's having trouble at home, because if their focus is drifting, if something's not quite right, and I know there's something at home, maybe there's some way I can help. And sometimes, you know, Tony, Lisa, Chris, and I, maybe we overcross that line a little bit in their personal lives, because sometimes we want to help out. Sometimes there's something for a really good employee that we could do something small and it will change their entire outlook on life. And they're loyal to us because they feel taken care of. the same at home. You know, you want your kids to fall, just like you said, and you want them to know you always have to get back up. This is just part of life. And sometimes it's not easy, but come to me and I'll help you. And if I don't know, I'll get you the answers, right? We'll find someone. And it's like that both ways, you know, home and work. And so I agree, but the adult children is tough. When I hear, "Mom, I'm an adult," I'm like, "I'm going to come across the table and pull your hair out." Yeah, I get it, but my goodness. So anyway,
I'm excited, honestly, just sitting here listening to this conversation. Like, I'm excited to share this episode with people, because I think we've, you know, in our previous episodes, we've talked a lot about principles that overlap and things that we do as parents and also leaders at work. I'm thinking it right now. So maybe as I think through it more, I don't know if I would change my mind, but I feel like if this isn't the most important principle that applies to both, it's got to be close to the most important. Just the idea of applying it to our children, applying it to our teams at work, that this is a safe place to fail, because that's how you grow. Like, if that's got to be top one or two things that we would want our kids to know and our teammates to know at work, that it's safe to fail here. We'll grow through it. We'll work through it together. You can be honest about it. Those things like that, I feel like that promotes growth more than maybe anything.
And I think it's important that your leaders come forward and say, "Here's the mistakes I've made." I think a lot of them try to pretend to be perfect. My employees know way too much about my life, probably more than I should share, but we're also a work family, you know, and there'll be times that we say, "Hey, Tony and I were thinking about going out and grabbing dinner tonight. Does anybody want to go?" And I'm telling you, most of the office will show up. It's not something we planned, and it's because we truly enjoy each other's company. We are really close. You spend a lot of time with these people, you know, and so again, it's that, you know, we'll learn through your failure. Let's all learn from it. And we'll, at our company meetings, we'll call out like, "Hey, so-and-so did this, but let's talk about how it happened. What led up to it? How did we fix it?" And it's not to call them out and embarrass them. And a lot of times they'll jump up and go, "Yep, that was me. And here's what happened." And myself included, I make a wrong call. You know, sometimes what do we sell? We sell insurance. We're a title insurance company. It's a risk weighing thing. And sometimes you weigh it and it's not exactly right. And I have to go, "Hey guys, I made the wrong call. I'm not perfect. Here's where I messed up, but here's how we're going to work through it and go forward." And it opens up them a safe place to come forward and share their failures. And sometimes they'll share things I didn't even know about, but they fixed it because they've learned from the past. And it does. It makes my work mama heart grow. You know, I love them. And I love that they love our customers and make them feel that when they come in. Hopefully that's what we're doing.
Yeah, I know. I mean, just speaking to like leaders sharing their mistakes, even though I wish I hadn't made the mistakes, obviously, as a parent, I can honestly say some of the best conversations that I've been able to have with my now adult children is reflecting back on ways that we could have been better as parents. And like being like, "You know what? At that time, I was loving you with all my heart and I was doing the best that I could. But now looking back on it, I would have done it differently." And like just having those conversations, that has been really powerful with our adult kids, to just be like, "Hey, we were doing our best, but we can see now that we would make this decision differently. Maybe we would have this rule that we didn't have, or not have this rule that we did have," things like that, that just as we've grown and evolved. And I think it means so much to them to hear us say that, to hear us admit that, you know, it wasn't that we weren't doing our best, but at the same time, you know, we were kids with kids. And so it was like, we did a lot of things that we thought were really good parenting that now we look back and we're like, "What in the world?" but we were just doing the best that we could to love our kids and protect our kids. And sometimes when you're trying to protect, that's sometimes when you make the silliest mistakes, but yeah, just, I love that idea of, you know, just being transparent at work and at home and building that family value of this is a safe place and we're all growing together and learning together and we'll continue to do that together. It's just really powerful.
Absolutely.
Well, I know we had some stuff at the beginning and we've taken up a lot of your time. I feel like at some point maybe we need to have you on as a guest again, because I really feel like this conversation could keep going. There's so much good leadership stuff here that we've gotten to talk about. And so thank you so much for taking time out of your day. I know you're very busy. And so we really appreciate it. And we're excited to share this. Corey, are you about to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to interrupt and say a heartfelt thank you for your husband's service and sacrifice and yours and your girls. Our son has been in the Army about 5 years now, I think. He's getting ready for his first deployment. So, again, not the same situation, but we are kind of experiencing. And I just cannot, as long as you guys have chosen this life, there's no greater sacrifice. And it really, we really could not say thank you enough to the both of you for the sacrifice of the service to our country. So thank you both.
Guys so much. I appreciate it. And I'd be honored to be on again. Thank you guys for thinking of me. I really try to share this stuff within our offices, but you know, at any continuing education. I know Chris Morris is speaking tomorrow night on leadership and culture for a real estate event and kind of what we're doing differently here for growth. And so if you guys ever wanted, we could even come on together. We'd be happy to do that. So
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
That'd be great. Well, thank you again. And look forward to continuing the conversation.
Absolutely. And I'll see you guys soon on an order, I'm sure.
Yes, you will.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this content, hit subscribe or follow and share the show with a friend. Thanks for listening to the Business Rents Podcast, made possible by the Schiffer Team with Canopy Mortgage.